Okay, thanks everybody for joining me again to another edition of Conversations with Dr. Cowan and Friends. And lately I've been having a lot of new friends, people I haven't met before. And that's also very interesting and exciting for me. Sometimes I hear things like this guy knows more about gongs and bells than anybody else, and how to put an Aeolian wind harp in your garden and make your plants grow. My guest today, and I hope I get the name correct, Shimon Janovitz, and otherwise called Simon sometimes, but I'm pretty familiar with calling people Shimon. And I always ask my guest, Shimon, if you hear anything that I say wrong, please correct me. So I don't want to leave anything uncorrected. And we met on a Zoom call. I think it had to do with a group of doctors and other scientists and interested parties working with the Tanzanian health minister to try to make a new health system for Tanzania. Unfortunately, their president has just died in the last week or so, which is very unfortunate. Anyways, that's where we first met, and I think Shimon sent me a very interesting video on having to do with the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic, which we wrote about a little bit in our book. And I think Shimon also has been involved with the 5G electromagnetic field world for many years and is actually a kind of a some sort of engineer or something, I'm not sure, but having to do with conductors. So that I would love to hear more about those two things and then anything else that you would like to share with our audience. So again, welcome, and maybe just start by telling us a little bit about who you are and what got you into doing something as crazy as looking into the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic. Nobody looks into that anymore. Most people didn't even know it happened. So if you could introduce yourself and let me know, let's start off there and then we'll go from there.
Great. So thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. So I'm based in Israel, but I've lived and worked around the world for a few years, quite a few years. I'm originally from electrical engineering from the Technion in my hometown of Haifa. I've worked in the high-tech industry and also started my own company based on a patent for technology that I have created for improving the production of semiconductors. And but mostly for quite many years, I've been researching what's going on in the world, the history of how we got here, what's gone wrong along the way, because it was obvious to me that many things were not right in some sense.
Was there an event in your life that triggered this, or do you, or could you tell us, like, are we talking 5 years ago, 20 years ago, or?
I think in high school, in a history class, the teacher said something about the history of some sort of events of 100 or 200 years ago, and I jumped in and said, "Hey, something does not look right to me in what you said. Can you please show me the documents that you're referring to?" I was, I think, 17 at the time, but I already read a book called 1984 when I was 16, I think. And the book, a novel, maybe, seemed to me to be more of a guidebook to this world than a novel. So since then, the world has become more Orwellian in many ways. And so High school.
So you were already primed as, you know, a teenager to what I call be a, hey, wait a minute person. Like what you just told me, I may not know what's right, but I know that what you told me is not right.
That's exactly how it happened. And then for quite a few years, I've abandoned this because I wanted to pursue a career and so on. And then I came back to this. I think it was the year 1995, which marked a dramatic change in my way of thinking, because in 1995, there was a new operating system in the market called Windows 95, and it came with a built-in web browser. At that time, there was a web browser war, but nevertheless, there was a web browser built into the system, and suddenly I could just start researching and reading and reading and finding amazing things. And also my travels around the world, talking to engineers and scientists, opened my eyes more. And you know, and then a series of events, 2001, and then a few wars. And then I really started getting some sort of feeling that we are approaching some kind of an end game, which I think is what we are seeing right now.
Yeah. So it sounds like for you, it wasn't a sort of personal event that triggered this. It was really, it's almost like a spiritual quest or inner guide that had been pushing you all your life to just find out what's behind the veil, essentially.
It's mostly scholarly.
Yeah.
Partly spiritual, but mostly scholarly and just meticulous research.
Yeah. And
using my expertise in physics, in electrical engineering and physics, and then exploring more about, for example, currently we need to know, everybody needs to know a lot about microbiology, a little bit about medicine, and most importantly, the multidisciplinary aspects of everything, because I think it takes knowledge from different areas to try to make sense in what's going on.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. So at some point you decided to look into the infamous 1918 Spanish flu pandemic. What happened there and what did you find out?
Well, I just forgot to say that up till the year 2020, I may have given an interview or two, but it was in 2020 that I decided to do a few videos of my own. And one of them was about the Spanish flu. And why did I choose to do that? Because I knew that there was just a horrible resemblance between what happened then to what's happening nowadays.
Yeah.
And I thought that people needed to be made aware of that horrible resemblance. Because if we don't know enough about history, it's destined to repeat itself, and not in a favorable way.
Got it. So what was the situation that was similar in leading up to 1918?
Well, before 1918, we already had something called the Flexner Report, and some very, very powerful people got involved in basically hijacking the profession of medicine.
Yeah.
And this was 1910. And then in 1918, there was World War One, which was then called the Great War, raging on in Europe, and something remarkably horrible happened, because at that time, a very powerful and prominent person, John D. Rockefeller, already started his Rockefeller Institute of Medical Research. And there were fresh troops enlisted in the United States to be sent to the war in Europe, which was about to end at that time.
Yeah.
And then somebody decided, let's use these soldiers as let's experiment on them. Why don't we play with vaccines? And they called that vaccine a serum at the time. And they started injecting people with that serum, at first soldiers, but then civilians. And people started dying. And at that time, nobody knew what a virus was. And in fact, this serum was an anti-meningitis vaccine made from the pus of horses. So I'm not sure what was in it. Probably bacteria, staphylococci, and maybe some toxins as well. But certainly it was not an antiviral vaccine.
Yes.
And nobody knew what viruses were.
And are you saying that, as far as you could tell, there was nothing called a Spanish flu pandemic before the vaccines?
I think there was, the short answer is yes, there was nothing like that.
Yeah.
The word influenza was used to symbolize, to refer to something that is, something that you're feeling unwell for a while and then it goes away. Nobody knew what influenza was. And certainly there was no such thing as Spanish influenza prior to.
Got it. Okay, so a situation where nobody is that sick and there's this huge war and famine and pestilence and all kinds of chaos all over Europe. And Rockefeller decides that let's inject these young men and people with this horse serum pus stuff and see what happens.
That's one way to look at it. And so I don't know how much of the disaster that followed was intentional and what portion was experimental. But certainly the results were dreadful, because I couldn't find a single number of how many people died then, but estimates are between 50 million and 100 million people worldwide.
Do you know how many people were vaccinated in the US or worldwide?
Well, I know that about 6 million US troops were enlisted. Of those, about 2 million were sent to Europe. But as photos from the era that I have collected show, they did not stop at vaccinating the soldiers. They continued to vaccinate the entire population of some areas.
Yeah.
And doses of this serum were shipped to countries all over the world. And wherever these doses were shipped, there was an outbreak of this Spanish flu.
Got it. Where there previously hadn't been.
Nothing like that ever existed. Now, the thing is that it was such a huge disaster. I mean, so many casualties. And the narrative ever since is falsely, it's been hijacked to say to people, you see, look at how a small virus can create all that. We should be forever careful. lest some kind of virus shows up and do this to us again. And nobody's talking about the vaccines or the serum that did all that.
Yeah. Even though, as I pointed out in my book, they actually did contagion studies, Boston Health Department, and literally demonstrated that there was nothing transmissible about this flu.
I haven't read your entire book. I read parts of it, and I'm familiar with that. And this is probably true. I also mentioned in my video a medical doctor who lived at the time. She was an adolescent. She wasn't yet a doctor, but she recalled later. Her name is Eleanor McBean, and she wrote in her books that it wasn't contagious at all. Simply, you either got the vaccine and then you got very ill and maybe you died and maybe you didn't. If you didn't get this vaccine or serum, nothing happened to you. Yeah. It wasn't, nothing was contagious in there. It was simply, did you get the shot or not?
Right. And so in the shot can't make you contagious. It can only make you sick, like you sick, not you can't make somebody else sick.
That's what happened. So Initially, the soldiers, some place in Kansas, they were the first one to be injected with this. And sure enough, shortly after vaccination, I think it was 3 doses of this cocktail.
Yeah.
And many of them started showing up in clinics in the adjacent camp, Fort Riley, Kansas, to be exact. And then things started going wrong from there.
Yeah. Okay. So then what happened? What did you look into next, or where did you go from there?
From there, I collected a few images from the era. I noted that they started blaming people for spreading a disease, and they forced them to wear face masks. Just like today.
Yeah.
And they ordered public places closed, just like today.
Yeah.
I mean, there was not a lockdown, but they closed high schools, churches, swimming pools, all sorts of places of amusement. Stay at home and wear a mask at all times. Or go to jail or something like that. And then, so people who were being actually murdered were being accused of spreading a disease. That is just unbelievable.
Yeah, sort of like today.
Very much like today. And
so did they end up stopping using this serum injection, or?
The pandemic, the Spanish flu pandemic, stopped when they stopped using this serum.
Got it. Do you know why they stopped using it? Like, what did they come to a decision that they're catching on to us or something?
I don't have all the details. I can speculate a little bit. And I can say, I think that they said, okay, we've had some sort of a social experiment. We've done enough of it. We got the results. We know how to proceed with this. And now we can stop and use it later on. And the next time it re-emerged was in 2007, when one Anthony S. Fauci has written a paper about the Spanish flu.
So there was no similar, quote, epidemic of the same nature between 1918 or so and 2007.
There were epidemics. They were, a lot happened. They invented more viruses. They invented the electron microscope. The world became much more toxic. A lot happened. So there were so-called pandemics or epidemics, but nothing on that magnitude.
Got it. Yeah.
And then there was the two papers in 2007 and 2000.
There was this sort of HIV/AIDS thing that Fauci also had a lot to do with. And that was, to me, was sort of a trial run of this.
Yeah, so the Spanish flu was some sort of, I think, a trial run of something. And then they continued. They're still at it as we speak.
So what happened in 2007?
So there was, I showed that in my video. Fauci co-authored a paper about the Spanish flu. And he claimed there, the first paper, no less, that the entire genome of the virus has been sequenced. And it was found, it was called the H1N1 flu virus that supposedly caused this Spanish flu pandemic.
Did you ever look into how he sequenced this virus?
Initially, I thought maybe they had a time machine and they could go all the way back with a lab and sample the virus and sequence it. Of course, no virus existed. There was no virus. It was a fraudulent paper. And as I say in the video, I have no idea why it wasn't retracted, because Fauci himself, a year later, published another paper in which he said that there was a predominant role for bacterial pneumonia in the death of all these people. But then he said, okay, so it wasn't, of course, there was, what killed these people, so he said in the second paper, is bacterial pneumonia. But then he said that this bacterial pneumonia likely resulted from a secondary infection after people were ill, made ill by the virus, and then they got weak, and then bacteria attacked them. This is the second Fauci paper related to the Spanish flu. So he's a very interesting person, Fauci. He knows a lot about many things and involved in all sorts of diseases and throughout the 20th and 21st century. Yeah, you get the picture, I think.
Yeah. And so I'm sure there was no isolation of any H1N1 virus or sequencing of any genome in 2007 as well.
I think that they had some strange narrative of frozen bodies in Alaska, yeah, or something like that. Nothing to be taken too seriously.
Got it. All right. So then what happens?
So
you're already, by this time, you're like hot on the trail. You understand what's happening by then.
So I made this video in 2020, or I think maybe early 2021, but then I've already noticed how 5G technology deployment was going on everywhere, worldwide, like crazy. And I was among the ones who campaigned against this, because I know how much this technology could be exploited for, not for good means, and how dangerous it is. And we were talking about the interaction.
Could you explain, because it's very confusing to a lot of people, just, you know, what is 5G? What is a man-made electromagnetic frequency, and how and why does it cause damage?
Okay, so 5G is not the first attempt of using man-made electromagnetic waves. It's just a very complicated elaboration on existing technologies like 4G and other, and in fact, radio frequencies in general. 5G in particular has some very nasty capabilities that did not exist before. But basically, electromagnetic radiation is something that is created by man-made apparatus, either deliberately for means of communication or not deliberately as noise. You know, if you have an electric locomotor, right, and it generates electromagnetic radiation. It's not intentional, but yeah, it does that anyway. Every power station does.
But there's also natural electromagnetic fields, right? Like the Earth and the Sun and that, right? So they're different.
Yes. So light, natural light from the Sun is also electromagnetic radiation, but it is usually of the sort that we are, as biological creatures, well equipped to deal with it.
Yes.
And, you know, sunlight, of course, is the energy source for all life forms on Earth. And there are other sorts of electromagnetic radiation, like X-rays used for medical diagnosis purposes. This could be really dangerous. Could give you, you know, people need to protect themselves and try to do as few X-rays as possible, because this is very unhealthy. And there is the kind of electromagnetic radiation that's used for communication.
Right.
And
what's different about the quality of that versus the sunlight?
Well, the interaction between electromagnetic waves and biological system is not straightforward, and it's not linear. Some electromagnetic radiation penetrates through the body. Sunlight doesn't do that. And when it does penetrate, it interacts with tissues. And this interaction is problematic. And there is one simple rule. The higher the wavelength, the less it penetrates your body. So visible light is considered a very, very high frequency radiation, and it doesn't penetrate your body. And most communication uses electromagnetic waves of much smaller frequencies. We also divide them to ionizing and non-ionizing. This is a rough differentiation. For example, X-ray or gamma radiation would be ionizing, and communication signals would be non-ionizing.
Right. That's not a strict delineation.
Yes.
Okay.
And ionizing and non-ionizing does not tell all the story, of course, because there is a lot of damage that could be created even by non-ionizing electromagnetic radiation. You know, everybody knows that if you have a cellular telephone, you'd better not keep it very close to your body, better not play with it too much, because it's unhealthy. But 5G is really a game changer in that respect,
What makes it a game changer? Can you spell that out?
Two things. It is first and foremost mostly not intended for use by people. So whereas 4G is supposed to make our cellular telephones, the one that you and I have, makes them work, able to send and receive communication. It turns out that 5G is mostly not about communicating between people. Only a small part, it's like a triangle, and One of these vertices is the extension of the existing 4G cellular telephony communication, but the other two vertices are something called the Internet of Things, which is not connecting people, it's connecting machines and connecting apparatus. And the other vertice is the something that's called ultra reliable low latency communication. It's supposed to allow communication with robots. And this is not human. This is something out of this world almost. And people don't understand this. They don't, when people hear 5G, they usually think, it's an extension of 4G. It will allow us to, it will make our cellular phones faster. But no, this is hardly the story. And this is one aspect of it. There are others.
So it's basically using, instead of these long wavelengths, which are harmless and actually probably nourishing, it's using very short millimeter wavelengths, which are essentially toxic and meant to be communication between things, not between people and...
No, the 4G and 3G were already using short wavelength. Yeah. 5G uses the same spectra of 3G and 4G. It doesn't get rid of it. In fact, 5G augments anything 4G in it. Yeah. It just takes the spectrum of frequencies used and extends it by a lot. But 5G will happily work with the same frequencies used for 4G. The difference is that it has a technology called active phased array antenna, whereas 3G and later 4G were emitting blobs of, some sort of directional beam, but not very well pinpointed. 5G changes this in another respect, and this respect is that it is capable to generate very narrow beams, almost like a laser weapon. It's not just to have a general idea. But there is another thing about 5G, which is that for the first time, there's a nice person called Elon Musk, and Elon Musk has started one of his companies is called SpaceX, and it spinned off another company called Starlink. So Elon Musk got an approval, authorization from the FDA to launch 42,000 satellites to low Earth orbit. And each of these satellites is equipped with four 5G transmitters. And then they are using frequencies higher than what we've been accustomed to in 4G. 4G, for example, uses around 2.45 gigahertz. 2.45, incidentally, is the same frequency that is used in your microwave oven, in your kitchen, and in your home Wi-Fi router. So all these frequencies were roughly in the same ballpark, 1 point something gigahertz. And 5G continues to use those, but it adds the millimeter waves that you mentioned earlier. Millimeter waves are starting from about 20 something gigahertz. In fact, 30 gigahertz is 10 millimeters, and 300 gigahertz is exactly 1 millimeter. So anything between anything like 20 megahertz and above is about, 20 gigahertz and above is called millimeter waves. Although it is not 1 millimeter, it's 10 millimeters is also called millimeter waves.
Yeah. Got it. So they're launching all these satellites and essentially bathing the world with all these millimeter or 5G frequencies?
It is so unbelievable. You know, the astronomers all over the world started complaining that the satellites are blocking the stars. They cannot watch the stars anymore because there is a blanket enveloping Earth of satellites.
Yeah.
And now these satellites are very sophisticated. They are synchronized with each other by laser beams, and there is no line of sight between all of them, but a few hundreds of them can be well coordinated to work together. And by using hundreds of satellites simultaneously to create what is known as cooperative multi-point transmission, you can have extremely razor sharp wave. It's called wave. What is the exact term? I forget. It is beam forming. So you have beams that can be made very, very precise. And when you have beams that are so precise, of course, you can use them for the better, you know, to just send a packet of information to a specific telephone. Or you can use them for different purposes that are not so friendly.
Yeah. So what were you seeing in the last number of years that you mentioned to me that you could see that there was going to be some sort of end game happening? And what are you seeing as the kind of end game, or where do you see us now with regard to now we have this new injectable drug and we have this new lockdown and we have these new frequencies being deployed more and more than ever before?
Well, for quite some time one could see that the financial system was collapsing, and it was collapsing because oil has been used throughout the 20th century to back up currency, and oil is diminishing. Oil reserves are diminishing, and this is why they started resorting to fracking. So very, very crazy things were going around, and fracking causes earthquakes and causes all sorts of problems. And one could see that the economy was very, very sick. And strangely enough, they have been touting something called global warming. There are a few prominent people that said, oh, we need a lot less people on this planet because we have global warming. But the moment they started speaking about global warming, not in the wake of the Industrial Revolution when we started warming up the planet, when the planet was about to start getting very, very cold because the energy to heat it is diminishing. And this energy is also required to produce food. And I think you get the idea. And then, of course, the outrageous use of genetically modified crops and pesticides and the bees starting to die out, not because of glyphosate, but another line of pesticides called
nicotinamides or something. Yeah.
Nicotinoids. There was something called colony collapse disorder. And what was the first thing I heard when the bees were dying out? A virus did it.
Right.
It wasn't a virus who did it. It was a chemical by a prominent company. So crazy things started to happen. And, you know, a lot of fabricated events started to happen. Of course, there was the 9/11 thing, and then there was the all sorts of wars and the war on terror and Afghanistan and Iraq. And in my own country, there was some constant warmongering, and it was obviously a distraction of some sort. And so things were looking very, very bad. And we had some pandemics, you know, like the swine flu, the SARS, 2003. So having been able to establish some sort of understanding as to what was going on and to do some pattern recognition on events, I started thinking that this is, you know, there are sort of weaving the threads for some sort of fabric that will be the infrastructure for their end game. And this end game is happening right now.
Got it. So then bring on COVID-19 and the another round of imaginary virus.
Yeah, so I didn't know that there would be this new virus narrative, but I knew something was about to happen. So when COVID started happening, and since I already knew that in previous years, many, many people were dying every winter of something called flu, and I myself was very ill with something called flu, I wasn't very worried about the virus, especially since it seemed that it was mostly in the mainstream media. This is where it was the habitat of the virus. I couldn't see it in nature, right?
Yeah.
But the rhetoric, the propaganda, the hysteria, it was so intense. Something I immediately realized that this was part of a very nefarious endgame, and it had all the telltale signs of not of a virus, but what we see in fact happening. Some dramatic change in world order.
Yeah. So that's where we're at now. So now we're entering into a new round of some like 1918, some injectable experimental, you know, basically pharmaceutically based, I don't know what to call it, even a drug or something. But now we also have these other toxic influences, which we maybe didn't have. We have glyphosate and we have fluoride and we have 5G EMF frequencies. And we have a lot of hatred and lies and fear and masking and social isolation and people in nursing homes and all kinds of stuff. So do you have any sense of like where this is all going, you know? I mean, or... Yeah.
I want to mention that one more field of expertise of mine is nanorobotics.
Yeah.
And if you want, I can explain briefly what nanorobots are. But the most
interesting. Yes, please.
Okay. So nanorobots basically are, creatures, artificial creatures that are of nano magnitude. That is, their size is like. What a virus is thought to be, like 100 nanometers, maybe a little bit larger. So very, very small. And nanorobots have been researched for
These small particles can be created in laboratories, correct?
They can only be created in laboratories.
Yeah.
And they are created, designed, and assembled in such a way that they can do something in the body once injected into it.
Okay, what can they do?
Well, One thing they can do is swim. So suppose you have some nanorobot that has the shape of a corkscrew. And let's suppose that it has a electric or magnetic dipole, and it interacts with a rotating electromagnetic force field. You can easily make it spin, and using its, for example, if it has a corkscrew-like shape, it can swim forward or backward, depending on whether the force field is rotating clockwise or anti-clockwise. So one of the things it can do is swim.
Yeah.
And it can also, of course, carry some kind of payload. And the payload can be a medication, or it can be a toxin. If you want to destroy cancerous cells, you can build some of these nanorobots and launch them to attack the tissue that is affected by cancer and try to kill the cancerous cells. Or you can do other things. Another thing you can do with nanorobots and electromagnetic radiation is drilling. Usually if you want to insert something into cells, there is a narrative of something called endocytosis. But this is somewhat iffy. A much more efficient and straightforward way would be to drill into the cell and just force your way into it. And these nanorobots can also be made to work in coordination. And they can also have some kind of recognition for specific tissue. And finally, upon command, they can be made to release, disintegrate and release some kind of payload.
Okay. And so, you have experience either working with these or, you know, direct knowledge of how they're made and what how they work.
I spent many hours reading papers about this.
Yeah.
And I was amazed when I started searching to see just how advanced this is and who were some of the players. One of the major players in this field was DARPA.
Yeah.
So this has, this has medical as well as military applications. It can be used to cure people, and it can be used to do very terrible things to people.
Yeah.
And I have known from previously that what their agenda was. I knew that at some point there would be a need for a population reduction. That is number one. There is already a proven track record of sterilization. This is not a secret. I didn't invent this. I'm not making this up.
Right.
And what else? With new technologies, there are attempts to rewrite the human genome, right? This is another thing that they can do.
So that has to do with the injectable mRNA devices and things like that.
Exactly. And so personally, I'm trying to, with colleagues, and in the meetings such as the one in which we met, to try to look into these vaccines. We are not sure that all the vaccines are, even from the same manufacturer, are the same, because we see some people having severe injuries and some people not so much. What if these nanorobots are in there? We know for sure that there should be nanoparticles in there. Why? Because they said so. So the Pfizer BioNTech and the Moderna vaccines are supposed to include liposomes, which are lipid nanoparticles. But these nanoparticles could actually be nanorobots.
Yeah.
Depending on how they look and how they were designed.
Right.
And is there only mRNA in there? Is there mRNA at all? You know, these companies have a track record of not always telling the exact truth about everything. So what if there is mRNA plus reverse transcriptase, or some reverse transcriptase by some magic finds its way to interact with the mRNA, then the mRNA can become DNA? And how about the CRISPR-Cas9 technology that is won someone a Nobel Prize? This could be used to edit the genome, right?
Yeah.
So this is frightening. At least it's frightening me. I don't know about you, but I'm scared like shit because of all of this. And finally, one other thing that they are interested in, and they're talking about this openly, is to wire us to their cloud. That is to build some kind of infrastructure inside our brains and other parts of our body that can interact with their cloud through communication, electromagnetic radiation. Have we mentioned this already?
Yeah.
So
sounds like at the end of the day, it's like the way I summarize this, it seems to me like there's two tracks here. And it's interesting, there's, you know, when you look into the whole virus, what is, you know, the genome and the narrative, what they have is an in silico, meaning in the computer genome of an in silico, meaning in the computer virus. And so I actually make the distinction between there's two types of models out there. There's the water model, which is the life model. And there's the in silico or quartz model, which is the computer model. And both of them store information. Both of them have infinite number of surfaces and are holographic in their nature and can download all this information from all these different inputs. The difference is the quartz model, the in silico model, can't grow, evolve, feel, or think. It's just static. Now it can add more information, whereas the water model is essentially the evolving life model. And so if something happens to you, you can use that to change your structure and become a new person. Literally, you can think differently about life. You can feel differently about life. And I think what you're talking about is there is a push to make human beings become an in silico human being. And all these different aspects, whether it's fluoride or, you know, injectable devices or EMFs, they're all priming us to become in silico human beings. And I think we would agree, at the end of the day, we don't want to be in silico. I'm perfectly fine with being a water-based organism that can grow and evolve and think and feel and have sadness and tragedy and joy and comedy and laugh and cry. And that's the kind of world that I want, not the other one.
I had plenty of tragedy in my personal life, but I'm perfectly happy with keeping the situation as is.
Yes.
And hope to also get some joy. There are people, for example, Elon Musk is not making a secret of his obsession with uploading himself into the quartz.
In silico human being.
Yeah, he wants to live inside the computer. But I suspect that the goal is more nefarious, and it's all about domination and control.
The in silico people, you can control, and the water people, they're a little messy because they want to do their own thing.
Yeah, we are very messy. Yes.
All right. Shimon, thank you.
Thank you.
We will be in touch, and I appreciate you doing this. I think it'd give people a lot to think about and a lot to ponder about where they want to, how they want to live their lives, and just what kind of a human being they want to be. And if we can do that, then we're getting somewhere.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.